So, thank you to the organizers for putting this conference together. I'm happy to be here. So I'm here to talk about relating loop quantum cosmology to loop quantum gravity, try to understand exactly what is the symmetric sector in loop quantum gravity and how is loop quantum cosmology related to it. So a brief outline of the talk. First, I'll discuss some introductory motivating questions, then talk about different ways of imposing symmetry. Then I will recall lessons from the Klein-Gordon theory, where these ideas were precisely implemented. And then I will define C-symmetry in loop quantum gravity and B-symmetry in loop quantum gravity, and then use these to relate loop quantum cosmology to loop quantum gravity. And then I will discuss extension to gauge and diffeomorphism in variant levels, and then summarize and mention open questions. So, of course, the basic question is, does loop quantum cosmology accurately model the symmetric sector of loop quantum gravity? And in this question, there are actually two questions present. The first question is, what is the exactly symmetric sector of loop quantum gravity? And the second is, how is loop quantum cosmology related to it? I will take the viewpoint that states in loop quantum cosmology should be identified with symmetric states in loop quantum gravity in some sense. Other people may take a different viewpoint. For example, Tim Kozlowski focuses on doing things at the algebraic level. Well, they're different approaches. Maybe they will have something in common eventually. But at this point, I don't see a relationship between them. So the question of the exactly symmetric sector, that's the first question. And then the second question is the question of embedding. Embedding states of loop quantum cosmology into loop quantum gravity. And once these questions are answered, then we're in a better position to ask whether loop quantum cosmology accurately models the symmetric sector of loop quantum gravity. So some of you may be surprised that I say that the meaning of the symmetric sector of loop quantum gravity is a question. And it is a question. There's, of course, an obvious definition of symmetric sector that one might try. One can define a state to be symmetric if it's invariant under the action of the relevant symmetry group, but there's a problem with this definition. Namely, in quantum gravity, once you solve the diffeomorphism constraint, all states are expected to be invariant under the action of all symmetry groups, and so this notion of symmetry becomes rather trivial in quantum gravity. Well, I'm going to motivate a different approach to imposing symmetry. So let us go back to our first course in quantum mechanics, where we learned that when we have a classical relation we want to impose it in quantum theory, we impose it as an eigenvalue equation. So the idea is we first describe the symmetric sector at the classical level in terms of a set of constraints, and then we promote these constraints to operators and try to impose them in the quantum theory. Now, in general, this way of imposing symmetry will be different from what I refer to as invariant symmetry, meaning invariance under the action of the symmetry group. And in general, this new approach to symmetry is stronger. Now, I should say something further. These constraints will always be second class because you always have constraints on the configuration variables and you also have constraints on the momentum variables and they will never commute with each other. Now, there are proposals for imposing second class constraints in quantum theory, but they always suffer from ambiguities. So while we have an additional condition which we hope will reduce this ambiguity, we want the symmetric sector to be chosen in such a way that it is preserved by the dynamics. What's the motivation for this condition? If we have a sector which is preserved by the dynamics, then we can consider it as a closed system. We can consistently analyze this system apart from the non-symmetric degrees of freedom. And then this system can then be compared with model theories. And actually, in the Klein-Gordon case, this condition is actually sufficient to uniquely determine the symmetric sector. So, I will be discussing two ways of imposing symmetry as constraints. In both of these ways, I will be simply throwing away half of the constraints. Well, there's a reason for this approach. I'm not going to go into it. The first most obvious thing to do is to just drop all of the constraints on the momenta. And I'm referring to this as C symmetry. C refers to configuration. And another approach is to take complex linear combinations of the configuration and momentum constraints. Basically, you formulate the symmetry condition in terms of certain annihilation operators. And the B here is for balance because you're imposing symmetry on both configuration and momenta. corresponding to these notions of symmetry, you have embeddings. So basically, the C embedding maps delta functions to delta functions, and the B embedding maps coherent states to coherent states. So if you have a coherent state in the reduced theory, peaked at a certain point in the reduced phase space, I map it to a coherent state in the full theory, peaked at the same point. Now, what is the lesson from the Klein-Gordon theory? The lesson is that B symmetry is selected by the dynamics. So let us recall what happens in the Klein-Gordon theory. The B symmetric sector has some nice properties. You have, when you use B symmetry, you have exact commutation of symmetry reduction and quantization. And also the B symmetric sector has a nice property that the states, the fluctuations from symmetry in this sector are minimized in a precise sense. Now, in a nonlinear theory, of course, we're not going to expect such exact commutation of symmetry reduction and quantization. We're not going to expect the symmetric sector to be exactly preserved by the dynamics when it's an interacting theory, because we expect that the symmetric and non-symmetric modes will interact. But we would like to at least try to get something approximately dynamical. Now, if we look at C symmetry, in this Klein-Gordon case, we have exact commutation at the kinematical level, but then once we talk about dynamics, it's not even close. And it's easy to see why this is the case, because dynamics always involves both configuration and momenta. So if you have a symmetry condition which only involves the configuration variables, you don't have a chance of even having the symmetric sector approximately preserved. And then, of course, the invariance symmetry, it doesn't even have commutation at the kinematical level, because the space of invariance states, it's just too big to compare with the reduced model. It's too big to model only the symmetric modes of the field. So now let's try to apply these ideas to loop quantum gravity. I'm not going to define all these things in detail, but just to give the notations. First, we choose an action of the Euclidean group on the SU2 principle fiber bundle of the theory, and this induces an action on space, which then selects for us a flat metric unique up to scaling. We just fix one, and then we define A to be the connections on space, and then the phase space of the full theory is then just the cotangent bundle over that. Then we look at the connections which are invariants under the action of the Euclidean group, and that gives us the configuration space for loop quantum cosmology, and this is a one-dimensional space, so we can fix a little omega naught, and then the rest of the connections are proportional to omega naught. And then the phase space is then just the cotangent bundle over a invariant. And then this omega naught may be chosen such that it's a cotetrad that determines Q naught. And you can also choose a coordinate system such that omega naught is the Kronecker delta. And then notations for the quantum theory, of course, you have the cylindrical functions, the usual cylindrical functions in loop quantum gravity, functions that depend only on a finite number of holonomies. I also need to introduce what I call Sill underbar, which is cylindrical functions that depend on holonomies only along straight edges. So these are cylindrical functions where the graphs have only straight edges. And then we have the space of cylindrical functions in loop quantum cosmology. These are basically functions that depend on only a finite number of exponentials. This is basically the space of almost periodic functions. So let's define C symmetry in loop quantum gravity. We define this C symmetric sector, VC, just to be distributions in Sill star that vanish outside of the symmetric connections. All states in the space satisfy an operator equation. This is an operator equation that expresses the symmetry of the configuration variable, the fact that we're imposing symmetry on the configuration variable, but we're not imposing any symmetry on the momentum variable. Then we can also construct an embedding, define R, a mapping from the real line into the smooth connections just given by this map here. It's just a parameterization of the invariant connections. And then you can define the C embedding just to map delta functions to delta functions. And then if you want a more explicit expression, here's a more explicit expression. So this is an embedding of distributions in loop quantum cosmology into a certain type of distributions in loop quantum gravity. Now, a caveat here is that the codomain of this embedding is Sill underbar star, which is a kind of strange space, but it's as well defined as I can get, so I live with it for the moment. The image of this C embedding is roughly the C-symmetric sector. The only reason I say roughly is because the image of the C-embedding lives in SIL underbar star, whereas you can define the C-symmetric sector in SIL star. And then we also have an intertwining property. All of cylindrical functions of finite number of straight edges, they're intertwined by this map. So basically it's saying that the quantization of holonomies along straight edges is, they're consistent with each other in the full and reduced theory when you use this embedding to relate them. Now to define B symmetry in loop quantum gravity, we need to introduce some extra structures. We need to introduce a complex connection, an SL2C connection, which coordinatizes the phase space, and then its quantization becomes an annihilation operator, and then you can do something similar in the reduced theory. I call this coordinate A, and then A hat is the annihilation operator, and these define for us corresponding coherence states in the full and reduced theory. Then we can define the B-symmetric sector to simply be the span of all coherence states associated with the classical symmetric sector. Now, I need to close this space in some topology. I'm not completely sure what topology to close it in. Probably the weak star topology, but I need to think about that some more. But every state in this space satisfies this operator equation. It's exactly the same as the previous operator equation, except now it's an operator equation involving this complex connection. So this is a symmetry condition involving both configuration and momenta, because this complex connection involves both the configuration and the momenta. Now, you may ask, why is this only imposing half of the constraints? Well, the other half of the constraints is the complex conjugate of this equation, which is not imposed. So one can also define a corresponding embedding. Again, we want to map coherent states to coherent states, and then you can have a more explicit expression. And once again, the codomain of this embedding has to be defined in SIL underbar star. And here in this more explicit expression, this pi map is something defined using holomorphic representations. I'm not going to go into it unless people want me to. And then with the embedding so defined, the image is roughly the B-symmetric sector mentioned on the last page. Now we also have an intertwining property. Let's define a map beta from the complex numbers into the complexified space of complexified connections defined by this equation. So this C sub S is a phase space point in the reduced phase space. So basically this is saying that beta is, it's the inclusion map of the reduced phase space into the full space, phase space in these complex coordinates A and A complexified. So after defining this map, then we have this intertwining relation. So now again, we have holonomies that are intertwined, but now they're holonomies of the complex connection, which perhaps is not too surprising. Although it wasn't obvious to me at first. Now, we can try to extend this to the gauge and diffeomorphism invariant levels. It's actually easy to extend these constructions to the gauge invariant level. This is because, for the Gauss constraint, one can define a group averaging map for distributions. And it's easy to show this. I mean, you just start with a formal expression for group averaging on an element of SIL star. And then you just do some manipulations, and then in the end you get a well-defined expression here. So now that we have the group averaging map on from SIL star to the gauge invariant subspace of SIL star, we can just apply this group averaging map to our non-gauge invariant symmetric sector to obtain a gauge invariant symmetric sector, and we can also compose this group averaging map with our embeddings to obtain embeddings into the gauge invariant states. So that is. It's rather simple. What happens when we go to diffeomorphisms? Well, it's more difficult because, well, you don't have such a group averaging map defined on distributions. And then furthermore, if you want to look at a group averaging map on SIL underbar star, I mean, if you go through this derivation, you have problems on the first line, or even writing down the first line formally, because the diffeomorphisms do not act on SIL underbar star. This is basically because diffeomorphisms do not preserve the space of straight edges. So it's even more difficult if you want to do an embedding at the diffeomorphism invariant level. So let me summarize. So hopefully if I've convinced you, the goal has been clarified somewhat. We want ultimate, we ultimately want a sector of states which is approximately preserved by the dynamics and is appropriately symmetric. We've given a definition of C and B symmetric sectors in loop quantum gravity, each with corresponding embeddings of loop quantum cosmology. We've shown that with each of these embeddings, we have certain operators intertwined, basically holonomies of the connections. Extension to the SU2 gauge invariant level is easy. An extension to the diffeomorphism invariant level is hard. And if you want an embedding at the diffeomorphism invariant level, you furthermore have this problem with straight edges. So what are some open questions? Well, what type of closure should I use in defining the symmetric sector? It would be very good to define diffeomorphism invariant C and B symmetric sectors. Once these questions are answered, then can we find an approximately dynamical B symmetric sector? If we had approximately dynamical coherent states in loop quantum gravity, we could achieve this, but I'm not quite sure how to go about finding such approximately dynamical coherent states. And then if you have these questions answered, then you have a proposal for the exact physical symmetric sector of loop quantum gravity, and then you can see if you can extend these embeddings, these C and B embeddings, to this exact physical symmetric sector. So I'll stop there.
Any questions?
So there was this construction named shadow states that seem to sort of share some goals with what you're trying to do. You didn't mention it at all, so I was curious.
I was never aware of the connection, but I should probably look at them more carefully.
Any questions? This is perhaps too naive, but I would like to understand that do this B symmetric sector seems to be symmetric, what do you expect? Do you have the same physics eventually?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, so obviously, even at this kinematical level, you don't have an exact match between the image of this embedding and what you would naturally define as a B-symmetric sector, a C-symmetric sector. So that indicates that there's some inadequacy of loop quantum cosmology, but I mean, it's a model, and I mean, one needs to understand that.
For example, would you treat them as some kind of ambiguity which we have to come from your symmetric sector? Because in the music, for example, we have extreme sound. What is the direct theory? As I was mentioning, we don't have a choice of how you discretize. So I just want to understand if this can just give us some insight on what should be the theory which comes from the MDG, the symmetric sector. I think it is also true that that theory doesn't agree with what we already have. That is a problem.
Well, the key question in loop quantum cosmology is quantizing the Hamiltonian constraint. And you're not going to get anything from this framework unless you can get approximate preservation by the Hamiltonian constraint. So that would need to be done first, and I have no idea.
What is that you have with the film? Maybe the same as you as the does just this
letter. Oh, sure.
You also have a projection map of the space of the space. You just consider a projection map of the space of the movement device. It's what's
so the difference is, so here, with this expression, this PG, this is the projector, onto the gauge invariant subspace of cylindrical functions. So, this is the key difference, is that for the Gauss constraint, this projector maps cylindrical functions to the cylindrical functions. The group averaging map, for the diffeomorphism constraint maps cylindrical functions to SIL star. And so, I mean, I don't know how to evaluate an element of SIL star on an element of SIL star. I mean, yeah.
It sounds more technical.
Yes, it does, but it's enough to stop me because this is no longer a number. It's I don't know what it is.
Okay, now since we have a question, so let's try to draw from there.